the show.
Well, hey, everyone. We are here for this week's show, and I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very excited to be back with you with another really fun roundtable. I said on the front end of this as I was talking to our guests, I want this to be fun yet helpful. So very excited about that being the case. So let me introduce our panel. Martha is here. Hey, Martha.
Hello.
Good to be here with Martha, of course. We also have Robert Thomason. Robert, welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
Doing very well. First timer here on the Boundless Show. Very grateful to have him here. He is with our Focus Leadership Institute here at Focus on the Family and is Senior Fellow of Identity and Leadership. That could be just a whole show right there on what in the world we're to do with that as young adults. So, but very grateful to have his insight on this topic, and we'll introduce it in just a second. And our own T-Dub is back. Travis Williams, welcome.
Good morning.
Hey.
Or good afternoon, wherever you're at in your journey today.
You're just back to offer those warm words of encouragement that you often do to, especially the guys. So we're thrilled to have you back in the studio.
I'm going to give some softballs today.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Just easy stuff.
Yeah, that's good. We help them out a little bit. So, all right, well, here is our topic. And it's very funny. I was just saying before we started how Martha and I had talked about this topic a while ago. And just this week, Suzanne Block on it as part of her February series. So we're like, we need to talk about this and keep this theme going. So we are going to talk about the whole dating game, but specifically we get a lot of posts on the blog. We get a lot of emails in the inbox. And from the guys, we're often hearing, I've asked this girl out and I've asked this girl out and I've asked X number of women out this month and they all turn me down. And we're like, what? How is that even possible? So Martha and I are a little bit incredulous when we hear stuff like that. We're like, seriously? And then from the women, it's usually no guys are asking me out, or I don't even know of where any guys are, and, you know, my church, I don't know, or whatever. So we get gripes from both sides. And so we're going to talk about, in keeping with Suzanne's theme a little bit, what can you do and where can you go to kind of meet people? And in addition to that, what can you do to make yourself more likely to get asked out? And if you're a guy, to be accepted when you ask someone out, to have the girl say yes. So this is going to be good. We're going to get both a female and male perspective on this. So who wants to jump in from the get-go and give their first thoughts? When I threw out this topic, what'd you guys think?
Great topic. Number
Absolutely,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that, I mean, I just want to start off by empathizing with folks that are out there that are single, and it can feel overwhelming. I mean, just all the emotion stuff going, am I going to get married? Is she going to like me? Do I even want to get married? What's going on in my life right now? I think, you know, first and foremost, I want to say that I have a lot of empathy for folks that are in that situation. But today, we are going to give you lots of tips and tricks. Just kidding, no tricks.
on how this to from the guy who has his Bible open in front of him. He's already talking about tricks. Okay, here we go. Go ahead, Travis.
Hey, there's good stuff. There's
biblical
good,
tricks.
There's good stuff in the Word.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I really, really hope. And so, I mean, I'm going to be thinking as a girl and as a guy.
Okay.
Guess which one I'm going to have more success at.
That's going to be impressive.
That's good. Yeah. How about you, Robert? What do you think?
I'll be honest with you. When I very first hear, you know, about especially the guys feeling rejection, you know, I want to think about where the individual is placing their worth, if you will. Are they placing it in self, or are they placing it in God? Because ultimately, when you begin to place your worth in Christ and what He's done for us, that's unshakable worth. We're made in His image, and that individual has incredible worth then because of that. And so, though it hurts, it allows you to take a different perspective, perhaps, if you don't take it as personally. And there's an idea that would say that you would begin to think about the fact that there may be something, you know, going on with the other person who's rejected you. Maybe it's not you. Maybe there's something going on with them in their heart and mind right now. And it's an opportunity then for you to begin to reach out, befriend them, something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good thoughts.
I think along those lines, one of the things I was thinking about from the ladies' perspective, okay, mm-hmm. is that I think that your identity in Christ has to be super number one on the list, having that confidence and having a relationship with Christ that is truly your own will allow you to then step out of your little bubbles, your shells, whatever, to put yourself in more position to meet the kind of guy that you would like to meet. One of the things I was talking about just as we were preparing for this, as I brought up the idea of, you know what, ladies, be you and enjoy the things that you enjoy to meet the guys that you ultimately want to be with. If you're a creative person or you want to meet somebody who's creative, artist type, go to your free community college, take an art class, enjoy that kind of thing. And then one of the points that was brought up, well, what? How do you know if the guy's going to be a Christian then? Well, I think part of that is you've got to have that so ingrained in who you are that you're comfortable stepping outside of the Christian, typical Christian bubble. And because it's not that you're looking for unchristian guys. You're looking for that. But ultimately, you're just being who God created you to be. God created you in His image. And so you can be proud of the fact that you're, you know, one of His daughters, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so if you can get to that point in your relationship with Christ, then it allows you to the freedom to step out there and put yourself in situations that will probably get you closer to guys that you ultimately want to be with.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question for you. What if you're a girl who really likes girly things or a guy that really likes boy things?
Yeah, masculine things.
For example, I would have always wanted to take a cake decorating class, so I took a cake decorating class. But were there any boys there? No.
But I think that that's still good. I mean, investing in yourself isn't a bad thing. And because, let's face it, dudes like cake.
That's true. Yes,
that's what you do, Martha. You go to the cake decorating class, you make some killer cakes, and you put them on Facebook. Yeah. And then the guys are like, she made that cake. Was
exactly.
that
going? What's so happening? Then you go to the rock climbing class next.
With
and
a cake
like,
to
hey,
sample.
I'm just got this big cake. It's a rock formation. Enjoy, fellas.
It's a rock formation. That's great. Awesome.
I feel like encouraged. Thank you.
There's some hope. There's some hope in that. That's good. Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because I think, you know, getting back, first of all, this podcast is releasing around, you know, right before Valentine's Day. Everyone gets down around Valentine's Day. Everyone gets depressed.
Don't get depressed.
No,
I know.
No.
People, singles need to not get depressed. But no one sets out to move towards marriage and say, I'm going to do everything I can to sabotage my chances of getting there. I mean, no one says, I'm going to be 35 and still single because that's what I'm certainly setting out to do. You know, people generally that listen to this show want to be in it to win it. But you guys, so you're saying, Travis, like I like what you said about the class. You're saying that just by generally putting yourself in the spheres of a number of different people, mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know who's out there that would be believers as well. Now, what do you guys say to the problem of, because I've seen this with women a lot, they won't even go to coffee with a guy unless they know his complete, like, denominational and doctrinal rundown and, like, everything about him and what, you know, all this stuff. And I think that can be a little sketchy, too.
Well, I mean, ultimately, you're not going to know those aspects until you get an opportunity to get to talk to him. And maybe...
Well, no, they will, because they'll do reconnaissance. They go out and they, like, find all this info about them, and then they're, like, 10 years older by the time they figure this out. It's so crazy.
Well, I mean, one of the things you want to do, you're right, they may get that reconnaissance, but don't be afraid to get to know the individual for who they are. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to step out. I mean, what you're telling me is individuals taking calculated risks. They find these things out about them. Say, well, you know, I want to try to understand this individual, maybe where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Get the opportunity to walk out and get to know the person for who they are, you know, not just what they've heard about the individual, but mm-hmm. actually get to know them. Take that risk. Step out. Mm-hmm. Go and sit down for coffee at, you know, any local coffee shop or chain or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Just sit down and say, hey, what would you... What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And for some of those guys out there that are listening, I think it's, you know, as far as meeting young ladies, this goes along the same train of thought here. But don't be afraid to, you know, go out and ask. Find some point of reference with another young lady. Ask lots of questions. I know that Travis, getting an opportunity to step into the studio today, we ask each other a couple of questions. Where you're from, you know, what do you do for a living, or something along those lines. It gives you some opportunity to have something in common with
Robert and I have a great relationship now.
Would you go out with him if he asked you out for coffee? Is that enough? Right. Do you know enough about
right
him?
Right foot.
Yeah, absolutely. But it gives you that opportunity, and it's that. I think that's a secret. Have a couple of questions in your back pocket that you feel like like you can ask. Mm-hmm. And that will create some sort of conversation with the opposite sex. Well, what do you think about X, or what do you think about this? Or
Yeah,
I think along those lines, one of the things that I always feel like on the Boundless show, that there's healthy fear and unhealthy fear. And yeah, I feel like there's a lot of folks on the dating that, like you said, Lisa, nobody wants to sabotage their chances, but there's so much fear wrapped around this issue. And I don't, and I think some of that's just been ingrained through, you know, what we've been told about dating, you know, oh, don't do this, don't do that. And we're so scared that we just don't want to even take any kind of steps. We're so maybe unconfident. And this, I almost look at it as like, maybe we're a little unconfident in our faith in Christ, that we're not really sure that it's real, our faith. And so we can't even sit down and have a cup of coffee with somebody to get to know somebody. I mean, I think about that in the context of Scripture, and boy, you just don't see that kind of fear. You don't see Jesus go, oh, mm-hmm. boy, right. I better not have a cup of coffee with this guy. What if he wants to take advantage of me? What if this? What if this? Right. And I think it's just all those what ifs. Yes, those things may happen. I don't want to, like, you know, say that they're not. I mean, there might be some sleazy dudes out there.
Absolutely.
But even if you have a coffee date with that person, it makes you more aware of the kind of guy that you ultimately want, and it gives you even more of an awareness antenna of creepy guys that are out there. And you can go, you know what, I had a cup of coffee with a guy, and this is what I learned. So many people don't even have stories about, this is what I learned. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's more like, I've never done anything. Mm-hmm. I'm so scared. I've got to know I've got to know this guy. I've got to know his, you know, theological bents. I want to know if he's pre-trip, post-trip. I mean, everything about the guy before mm-hmm. I even sit down and get to know him. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all human beings and kind of on a journey, if you will, that none of us, even if we think we have it figured out, very few of us actually do have it figured out.
Mm-hmm. Now, Travis, I think you make a great point about healthy fear and unhealthy fear. You know, we all are scared to some extent. You know, I go back to Joshua 1:9, where God tells Joshua, you know, be strong and courageous. You know, I believe it's Andy Stanley who says that, you know, courage assumes fear. And so you may have the emotion of fear, but take on that attitude of courage to step up. Be strong in your convictions and have an attitude of courage. And don't be scared to step out of your comfort zone and, you know, discover if a guy asks a young lady out, hey, let's go grab coffee or a Coke or whatever, you know, to step out there and say, okay, I'll be willing to go with you and figure out who you are mm-hmm. and ask those questions.
I think it helps to recognize, too, that the other person's scared as well.
Absolutely.
Everybody's scared in the dating realm. No. I mean, that's the thing. We've got to just embrace that.
Right. And I think it'll manifest different ways. Like sometimes, you know, introverts will always say, well, you know, this is very difficult for me. And extroverts, it's difficult, too. They'll just probably show it in a different way.
Yeah, it is totally difficult for everyone. And I think what you bring up, Martha, is a great point. I think that's what I'm trying to get at, is she's a human being. And fellas, you're a human being. We don't have this all figured out. Mm-hmm. Love is a wild thing. And so that even if you're married, it's tough to figure out.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to just, you know, throw it out there and give yourself plenty of room to make a mistake. Yeah. Mm. And guys, if you throw it out there and it doesn't work, it doesn't mean that it doesn't work forever. It might mean that it's not the right time now.
Okay, absolutely. But let's get down to brass tacks here.
Some people
are just ignorant, okay?
True.
I think some people are ignorant of what they are doing or what they are not doing that really is not helping them along,
sure.
Okay? So I'm going to throw out a couple for the ladies. These are things that I thought of in the course of preparing for this. Ladies, I think, first of all, you know that I've talked to Emerson Egerich on this show, and I was so impressed in speaking to him when he talked about the language of respect. Mm-hmm. And we talk about it all the time with husbands and wives. And you're like, okay, you've sealed the deal. You've got a couple kids. You know, ladies, you better just respect your husbands because it's in the Bible. Well, you know what? Women, single women, can treat all men that way. And to intentionally speak words that are respectful to men and point out things that, you know, to say, wow, I really admire that about you. Or when you made that decision, or when you stood up in class and said that, you know, that was really impressive. To speak stuff like that, guys want to be around those kind of women. Guys don't want to be around.
Absolutely.
Guys don't want to be around the crazy ladies that are always talking about how they can, you know, change out a carburetor in a car because all the guys they know are so stupid. Okay, that is not helpful.
True.
So, ladies, let's start building the guys up and showing them that they can do things, obviously, in a complementarian way, and we don't have to accomplish it all on our own. That is one
beautiful point.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, guys.
Listen, we're like, I got a warm fuzzies and chills.
Yeah, like I was going. It was so good.
Yeah, if you went to that rock climbing class with your cake, and then also Martha,
you're such a good climber.
And then you said, "Wow, the way that you grabbed that rock was awesome."
Martha is going to be engaged by Monday.
Exactly.
She is going to seal this deal.
You know what, Sugar? That was so awesome. You did great.
Okay.
Have a piece of cake.
So here's my other one. Women do not travel all the time in packs. Women traveling in packs is not helpful. And I love the way there's a book called Dateable, and Haley DeMarco and Justin Lukadu talk about women at weddings, and when they have the, you know, the time when the band starts and you go out on the dance floor, they referred to it as women going out to the center of the dance floor and dancing around like witches around a cauldron.
Yes.
That is so true.
Like, it's eighth grade all over again.
It is like eighth grade all over again, and guys are just like, how am I supposed to break into the pack and single out one girl and say, by the way, what are you doing after this thing? It's ridiculous.
The line dance is ruined. Right. Danny, I mean, when Shania Twain busts on, you're, as a guy, you're doomed.
Yeah,
because there's no way you're going to go do the boot scoot with all the ladies.
With all the ladies. That's awesome.
So is there a safe number that's okay?
Nope.
One.
No, I'm just kidding.
One. No, I think it's just balance. I mean, I think to have girls' nights is great. I think to hang out with your girlfriends is great. Obviously, if you're going to go pick up makeup at the Lancome counter, you're not going to want a bunch of dudes joining you. I mean, there's a time and place for everything. But I think it's this idea, especially in group functions, that women cannot sit by themselves for like 5 minutes and just be approachable. Right. You know, they have to have their girlfriends with them because it's just so uncomfortable.
It gives just another hurdle for the guy, mm-hmm. in that now, instead of just like going and rescuing the damsel,
mm-hmm.
and not that the damsel's in distress or anything, but just rescuing the damsel, now he's got to like jump over the moat and get past like the bodyguards,
mm-hmm.
which may shut him down before
slay
he even gets
to
exactly
get there,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Good stuff. And then my third one I wanted to throw out was just this is very simple. Tell everyone that you know that you are open to being asked out. I mean, women, when they put that out there, and not to say, you know, I'm just like desperate or weird, or I'm going to go out with some, you know, unbeliever or crazy guy or whatever, but to say, I am willing to be set up. And here, you know, what I need in order to be set up is I need the guy to be a believer and to have a job. I mean, just put the criteria, which should not be extensive, needs to be out there. And it's so interesting because I have done that now in the last couple of years with women at church, with women in my Bible study, with women here at work. And just over Super Bowl weekend, I had four older women come up and say, so I know this guy that I thought of that I want to hook. And I'm like, you know, that's how you get it done. You have power in numbers and power in connecting and networking. So ladies, be open to it.
Yeah, I think just to jump on that quickly is that that's a step when you're saying that you're available, mm-hmm. you're now moving from the unhealthy fear to like a healthy fear. Like, look, I'm kind of scared to do this, but I'll tell you what, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm okay mm-hmm. with being asked out, or I'm okay having a cup of coffee with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's a huge step, and it's a confidence step that as a believer, you can be like, you know what? My confidence ultimately comes through my relationship with Christ. And that regardless of what happens on this cup with this over this cup of coffee or with my friend, I don't have to please my friend. I'm not and take all that pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
Just be like, this is what it is. It's a cup of coffee with another human being that I may get to like, I may not like, and it's okay.
Yeah. Well, as recently as 5 years ago, I was told by people I would just be amazed. They would say, "Oh, I just figured you didn't want to be married." And I'm like, what's that about? And they said, you know, I just gave off this vibe, or I looked unapproachable, or they never heard me talk about marriage, or I didn't look like I was open to it or whatever. So now I'm like, you know what? That barrier is down because I have put it out there. Okay. So I'm just saying. Okay. Other tips. Who has some other tips?
You know, go ahead. I was going to say, you know, it sounds like a lot when we Dr. Juliana Slattery talks about this in her book, Beyond the Masquerade, when she starts talking about finding your worth in Christ and what that means. And when you have that foundation set there, it gives you an accurate self-concept to know you're part of the overall story. And then that then leads to self-confidence from God and from Christ. And so you have that confidence to go out and have that safe fear and tell other people, hey, it's, you know, I would like to get to know other people and put it out there. You know, one of the things that we do, I'm fortunate enough, I get to work with quite a few college students and we have several graduates. And one of the things we do is my wife and I, we host dinners over at the house quite often. And when we host a dinner, you know, we'll invite tons of singles over just and we play games and have a good time and hang out, but it gives an opportunity for people to meet in a safe environment where there's no expectations. And so you may want to find somebody, if you know, if you're out there listening, you may want to find a couple to, you know, get to know and grow closer to and have something along those lines.
Or call Robert. Robert's willing.
Give me a ring.
Just move out to Colorado Springs. He'll set up these.
Robert will put you on the calendar for some game nights, and you'll be set.
That's awesome. Having good mentors. I think a key point for the guys. These guys, hang out with some other married guys that you think are cool, and you'll see hopefully you'll see some qualities in them that help you want to have what they have.
Yeah.
I mean, marriage is a beautiful thing. It's a hard thing. It's a challenging thing. Having kids is a beautiful thing, challenging thing.
I've got an 8-week-old at home right now.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about. But it's a good thing. Yeah. And so if you find some guys like that, I mean, get rid of the overnight video games, you know, where you're just playing all the time, and go hang out with like a married dude and get some ideas and have them look for some ladies for you.
Well, I would take it a step further and say I call it getting a PR team. Basically, yeah. You know, I had 12 years in PR and media relations, and you need to know how to work it. And I'm not, you know, married guys is great. Married couples, you need to be. We talk about that all the time here on the show. But I would say, conversely, like we talked about for the ladies, go and find some of those older women who are in the women's Bible studies in your church who know girls who are single and who maybe are their mentors, and go after them and say, you know, I mean, if they know that you're amazing, they're going to talk about it. Okay. They're going to tell these girls about it. And do not be averse. Okay. Martha has to go. She has to bust out of her cake decorating class. Guys, you need to start going and trolling the nurseries and the children's ministries in church and find where some of the women are, and not be afraid to go and like help out there maybe and get to know some of the women and older women as well. And again, it's that connecting, I think, that really is key.
But Lisa, we can't stress enough about being mentored. I think that is absolutely key. And guys, you know, Travis mentions all night video games. You know, quite honestly, you have to engage. You can't sit in front of a monitor or a television for 8 hours at a time and expect the women to flock to you. It doesn't happen that way.
And here's just another little piece of honest wisdom from Lisa A. Okay.
Drop it.
This comes down to I asked 30 girls out this month and they rejected me. It could be you. This is where you need to go to someone and you need to say, look, I need you to tell me honestly what's up here and expect some hard truth. Right. Because, you know, I have known guys who I would say are not in a position to be dating or marrying, but they are clueless about that and they need to be told. I had a guy approach me one time who looked like he stepped out of like a 1930s speakeasy. It was black fedora. He had a cane that he did not need, that he was just using as an accessory. Okay. And it's like, serious. And he thought he was so suave. And it was, you know, it wasn't even like it wasn't even anything where it would be appropriate to wear that. You know, it was just some kind of a church function.
That's the church Mac mentality, though. And I think that's like if you've asked out 30 girls, you're either church Mac-ing and it's coming off so like disingenuous. Or, you know, or there is something wrong with you. Like, I mean, guys, you got to be genuine, because no girl wants to feel like they're part of the checklist and that you're going church to church going, hey, ladies, what's up? It's not going to work. I like this question. Martha asked a question. This came in from Martha on the call line. Should a girl show she's interested by friending a guy on Facebook after the two meet? The answer is no. Mm-mm. Facebook is not a good thing for any kind of relationship status, because I'll tell you what, the guy, if he is on Facebook, I mean, I told Martha real dudes aren't on Facebook, although I am, because I am on Facebook.
Nice.
So am I.
Yeah. But if you do that, like, most guys will be like, okay, this girl is just like misses popularity and just wants to increase her friend count, and it could actually have negative things. And one of the things with guys and girl relationships, I think guys like the mystery to a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let them seek you out, you know, and be part of their deer hunting kind of mentality. Let them seek you out on Facebook. Don't initiate on Facebook with the guy, because then you just take out all the mystery.
Yeah.
For a guy. That's my
opinion.
Well,
but Facebook mm-hmm. also perpetuates shallow relationships, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, that ultimately is not what you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to, I mean, again, this comes back to Carolyn McCulley, y'all. You got to read the article we have from her, Gentlemen in a Digital Age. That's out this week, right?
Yes.
Okay. So check it out, because I think it ties in really well as to how you, how it is necessary, even in an age where you have so much social media and so many opportunities, you still are responsible for putting it on the table and for treating women and men conversely with respect in that. So,
that's right. Just don't send them a Farmville invitation, right. Guys.
It's not okay. So we just got the conversation started. We have to end it here, but we are going to pick it up. I'm sure we're going to get flooded with comments about, well, what if this and what if that and what if that.
Comment on the blog, seriously. get on Boundless. Write your comments. We will read them and maybe even respond to a couple of them. We love when you guys light it up on the blog.
Maybe, Travis, at some point, we're going to have to start sending you out to some of these guys. We're going to pick some guys. We're going to send you out, and you're gonna help them out. And
let's do a Dr.
We'll
Phil
send Martha
kind of
out
show
to the
like
women.
That, you know, we're like, guys,
Travis,
come hang out.
We'll send Martha
awesome
out to the
that.
Women, and yeah. She'll be like, oh, honey.
Chaps, come out to Colorado Springs.
All right.
We'll get you a rental home.
Or come to the Institute.
Focus Leadership Institute. If you're listening and you haven't been to the Leadership Institute and you're under 26 years of age, check it out.
Please,
Robert,
please,
you can
please.
Hang out with Robert and go to one of his dinner parties.
Absolutely, you can do that. And
Jenga all night.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Good discussion. Well, hey, everyone. We are back with another culture segment, and I'm very excited to have Dana Gresh on the phone. Dana, welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a great topic that we're going to talk about today, especially in a new year and kind of, you know, we've talked a little bit on the show here recently about resolutions and, you know, kind of that. What's the difference between willing ourselves to do something and what God gives us the grace to accomplish in our lives? And we have talked to you before, obviously. It was a real privilege to have you in the studio with Nancy Lee DeMoss talking about Lies Young Women Believe. You are also the author of And the Bride Wore White. So very familiar, I'm sure, to a lot of folks in our audience. And you've been all over the map on different shows and certainly Focus on the Family is a fan of you. We're going to talk about some themes from What Are You Waiting For, which is your latest book, just released last week. So congratulations on
that. Thank you.
Very exciting. Endorsed by our own Julie Slattery, our mm-hmm. clinical psychologist here at Focus on the Family. So we love talking to her and hearing from her as well. So this is kind of this is an interesting topic, because as I was kind of reviewing some of the materials and looking online and seeing what people are saying about the book, my first thought was, and it kind of comes off of a conversation I was having with some friends a couple weeks ago, and we've been in mentoring relationships with high school girls and college age girls, and our thought was, wow, you know, really, when we think about the issue of sexual purity, which is what you talk and speak about a lot, we were like, how come everyone out there is always talking to the teenagers? They're always, it's always like, okay, teens, you know, here's what you need to know and here's what's up. And we said, wow, you know, we're in our 20s and 30s. We're the ones that like have our own homes, live in apartments by ourselves. We're probably the ones that need to sit around and get some accountability on this and talk about it.
Right.
So I want to kind of touch on that a little bit, but let's talk just generally. Give us an idea of why you felt writing this book was necessary kind of at this moment in time.
Well, I really find that as people are exiting college. They come kind of out of that party culture, even sadly at some of the Christian universities. They find themselves making mistakes, but especially at the secular universities. There's an increase in the number of sexual partners they'll have, as well as the likelihood of having sex when they're at a secular university. And they come into their 20s with some wisdom that unfortunately is not the wisdom of God, but the wisdom of experience. And they have a lot of broken places in their heart from sexual relationships. And I really wanted to write a book that was a little grittier than anything I'd written before, a little bit more raw, a little bit more real, that answered the questions on their heart. Why does this hurt so much, and what do I have to do to heal? As well as, what motivation is there really for purity? Like, look at this world we live in. Why would I want to live a life of purity? So that's why this book is a little raw, a little real, but I still think appropriate. It does not use veiled terms, but I think, like the Apostle Paul answered very cutting-edge issues in 1st and 2nd Corinthians, I'm trying to answer some cultural issues with God's truth.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because just the other night, I had the misfortune of stumbling upon Grey's Anatomy and ended up watching a good portion of that episode. And it much of the episode centered around this female character, one of the doctors, who basically admits some way midway through the show that she's a 26 or 27-year-old virgin. And of course, it's just everyone like falls on the floor and they don't believe her. And it's just ridiculous. And it's just, and it was just like a real shocker to me to say, wow, that like that conversation and that storyline is even legitimate, that this is so bizarre and so weird. And, you know, how do you, when you're talking to young adults, you know, at college age and beyond, how do you even address them to kind of give them that assurance that, wow, you know what, maybe you're not a total freak? And how do you reconcile that with what the culture is telling you?
One of the things that I really like to do is not just use scriptural knowledge, but also social science to talk to the young adult and really kind of encourage them that it's not just spiritually but physically a benefit to waiting. One of the things that we know is that religiously active, middle-aged women who have had only one lifetime sexual partner are among the most orgasmic on the planet. And this is from some of the most liberal sexual studies out there. So we really can see that the body was obviously created to be monogamous. It works better when monogamy is the choice that you make. And so when you talk to them with that kind of stuff, and we can use the science of the brain to help them understand why their heart is broken, why they feel so much hurt when they've misused the gift of sex, then that gives you some real credibility, and you can say, let me show you how God can heal your heart.
Yeah. So I think that is kind of the question that you pose in the book, because I think there is that cultural misconception that, you know, everyone talks about, well, you know, you have to be well practiced, you have to be, you know, you have to make sure that you have the latest Cosmo issue, that you know what's going on, what's the latest and greatest, you know. I think there's a lot of that misconception. And you're basically saying in the book, the question is, what are you waiting for? And so let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, when you're talking to young adults on this subject, what are you really trying to communicate to them as far as the value beyond just mechanics or broken hearts or whatever? What really are young adults waiting for when it comes to sex?
Well, the Hebrew word for sex in the Old Testament is yada, Y-A-D-A, and our culture has kind of grasped onto that through Seinfeld and other cultural icons. Yada, 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 blah, 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 boring, boring, boring. Well, it's not such a boring word after all. It's used first in Genesis 4:1. Adam lay with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth. So, you know, there's not really a passive moment here in Adam's life. I wanted to know what that word meant. It meant to know, to be known, to be deeply respected. Adam yada with his wife. Adam respected. He knew her. Not a mention of the physical, but it points to a deep emotional and spiritual knowing. That's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for that respect, that knowing. That word is used over 900 times in the Old Testament, and its uses convey layers and layers of truth to us about sex that I think we can trace from the book of Genesis to Revelation in the Greek counterpart of the language. And that's what I've done in the book, What Are You Waiting For? And I think it answers every question that our heart asks about sexuality.
Hmm. So for the young adult then who is not married, I mean, one of our deepest longings as humans is to know and to be known. Mm-hmm. So what really, I mean, how do we actively wait then in this season of our lives?
I think you wait by getting so lost in God that when a guy or girl wants to find your heart, they have to get lost in God to find you. And I know that it doesn't make any sense to ignore the dating scene to find the one that God has for you. But when you look at this word, yada, and you look at the fact that it's used over 900 times in the Old Testament, but in most cases it's used in verses like this, be still and know, yada, that I am God. You see, the word is used to convey a deep knowing between God and his people. And God is saying, when I look down on this earth and I try to find something so holy and passionate that it could help you understand the passion that I have for you, the only thing I see is a pure and holy marriage relationship. That's it. Now, how motivated is Satan to see that picture destroyed in your life? He is motivated. And I believe if we get lost in a yada love relationship with God, that's what will ultimately lead us to a yada love relationship that's a picture of his love.
Okay. Yeah. So what, I think that's good. And I think it's good to understand kind of that, you know, really that theology, to look at it as a whole picture rather than, I think it's so, you know, those of us that grew up in the 80s and 90s culture, it was kind of that, you know, just do this and then don't do this. And, you know, a very kind of, cookbook kind of approach.
There wasn't an explanation of the benefits.
Right.
Don't have sex.
Right.
Well, why not? That's like telling somebody don't eat chocolate cake or lasagna and not telling them you're going to be skinnier, you're going to feel healthier, you're going to be more alert, your body's going to lose weight. You know, that's what we've done with sex historically is we've not said there's these benefits and we can trace these benefits. There's physical benefits, there's pleasure benefits, there's spiritual benefits, there's emotional benefits to waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know I remember hearing John Piper speak once at a conference. I can't remember if I've referenced this on the show before, but and he was referring to a young man who had come and talked to him and asked him specifically, Dr. Piper, I just don't know that I can make it through my whole life with this, you know, if I am not going to have sex, how in the world am I going to make it? I don't think I can make it through life, trusting God enough with that. And I think he had almost given himself some kind of self-imposed deadline, you know, that or God, a deadline that, you know, if God hadn't brought someone to him by whatever age, then he was just going to chuck it all. And I just remember thinking of that and being like, wow, you know, I know that kind of vulnerability in that sense would resonate with so many people. And it's a, you know, it's a lie, like you said, that Satan wants to tell us, but living it out practically is a very difficult, difficult thing in that sense. So, how would you encourage young adults to integrate really a theology of understanding the theology of sex and God's design for it with that practical timeline is ticking and how really do I actively trust God through whatever season I'm in the midst of this?
Well, I think you just don't want to sell yourself short. I think that's the bottom line, is that any time that we reach out for something in an immediate gratification type of way, that we end up selling ourselves short. And evidence of this is that in the Old Testament, when God talks about a holy relationship between Adam and Eve, when he talks about a holy relationship between Hannah and her husband, when she's crying out to God to have a baby, this word yada is used, this knowing, this deep respect, this spiritual and emotional word. But when sex is used outside of the context of marriage, the word used is shakab, and it's a euphemism for sex that's often used in conjunction. It's a word that basically means emission, but in essence, it's talking about an exchange of body fluids. So when you reach out for that immediate gratification, you're going to get a mere exchanging of body fluids. And people wonder why cheap sex, why one-night stands, why friends with benefits is never enough, why it doesn't quite do what you thought it was going to do. So you wake up the next day and you just want the next fix. It's because it's not the real thing. A counterfeit is never satisfying. You're always going to crave more. What they're really looking for is the genuine thing, the yada relationship. And the only way you get that is through discipline and through waiting and through the heart of God.
Yeah. Well, and I know we talk a lot here at Boundless about, you know, sex being and the desire for sex being a motivator for marriage and how God really has called probably most of us to marriage. I mean, there are obviously some who are called to celibate service, but marriage is in God's design for most people. But yet we as a culture are protracting our singleness. And I think the church has kind of remained silent on this in many senses. And as a result, we have a lot of singles waiting and waiting, delaying marriage. And then it becomes, you know, more and more difficult to delay sex. And as a result, I think we see rises in the use of porn. We're seeing other kind of perversions of what God intended for sex. And I know you talk a lot about that in the book as well, and really candidly addressing stuff like everything from, emotional, being tied emotionally to people and getting caught up in that, which would be one end of it, to porn, to lesbian relationships. Where do you see all of that kind of falling in the spectrum, and how should the Christian kind of address that, not only in a guarding kind of sense against sin, but also dealing with friends and others who may be struggling with that?
Well, I really wanted in the book to develop a very practical theology. I wanted them to have the opportunity to say, well, why is friends with benefits a bad thing? Because it's becoming so popular. I mean, there's this Ashton Kutcher movie that's glorifying it, released right now, and it's going to become even bigger than ever. What do we say to a friend who's doing the friends with benefits thing, and how do we explain to them that it's not good? And so not only have I used scripture, but, for example, when answering that friends with benefits question, I went to the brain. And, you know, the Apostle Paul talks about, don't you know when you have sex with a prostitute that your body becomes a one with her? And Lauren Winner, the author of Real Sex, has said, what he's really saying is, don't you know that even if your brain doesn't, your body makes a promise to her? And what we know now is that the brain chemicals of sex work this way. When a woman has sex, the deep limbic system of her brain is washed in dopamine. It's an addiction chemical. And oxytocin is a bonding chemical. These two cause her to crave and feel bonded to someone she's had sex with. So she might say it's just a friends with benefits relationship, but at the same time, her body is now bonding to that person and expecting something out of the relationship. This also explains why a woman's emotions are so broken when she's had sex with a guy and they break up and they're not there together. Why is there that deep hurting? I've talked with women. I've counseled hundreds of women in 12 years of ministry to teens and single women. And so many of them will say, you know, I dated this guy for 5 years and we maintained a standard of purity and we parted ways and it was painful, but I'm okay and we're still friends. But why can't I get over this guy? I only dated him for 6 weeks and we got a little bit sexual. We didn't even go the whole way. But their bodies, those chemicals were released, and that bonding began to occur, and the body was made to be monogamous. When you explain that to someone, it helps them to understand their heartache, and it helps them to understand God's standard.
Yeah, that's true. And I think you hear the stories, it seems, so often from people who are on the other side of that decision, having, you know, struggled through that and made certain decisions and whatever, and now on the backside they're saying, wow, yeah, I never would have done that had I known. And just the ties, you know, especially when people eventually get to marriage and then they're having to deal with kind of that baggage on the back end, I think it's something you don't think about. And I always say that, you know, when I mentored girls, I said, you know, it doesn't matter how many purity rings you have on your hand if you're sitting in your basement under a blanket with your boyfriend. I mean, honestly,
right. Exactly.
You know, it's like, let's be serious about this. And, you know, what you ascribe to in your head, you need to look to your future and say, you know, backwrite your story and say, what do I want this to look like in light of that? So. Well, that's awesome. Dana, thanks so much. Want to make sure that everyone knows that the book is now released. It is called What Are You Waiting For? The One Thing No One Ever Tells You About Sex. And like we just said, very candid discussion here on a number of different issues. And applicable not only for women, I think, but for guys as well. Just a good discussion. Tell us, Dana, where people can find out more info about the book. We're going to put it on our blog as well, but just give us info about where they can find out about you and some
great
of your other stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, you can go to my website, purefreedom.org, also danagresh.com.
All right. Awesome. And we are actually, you have graciously given us several copies of this book. So we want people to check out our blog, and we're going to have you share a little bit of your own story. You out there, you listeners, if you want a copy of this book, we want you to weigh in on our blog. We'll put the question there, but we want you to basically describe kind of whether it was a moment in your life or a decision you made, or just kind of how you have processed the whole idea of sexual purity. Did you make a decision at some point that this was, you know, what you needed to do, and what did that look like, you know, biblically for you? Or did you have a discussion with your parents or within a youth group when you were younger? And then just how have you lived that out since then? So we want to hear your stories, and we will do that on the blog, and we'll be giving away some copies of this book. So, Dana, thank you so much for carving out some time for us here at The Boundless Show and sharing this, and thanks especially for writing this book. I think it's going to be huge for those in our generation.
Thanks. My pleasure to be with you today.
All right. Hey everyone, opening up this week's inbox, I have Candace with me. Candace.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, great to have you back again.
Always a pleasure.
In the new year, so I love that we're starting to schedule some of these so we can hear your wonderful, sweet voice.
Oh, it is good to be back. I miss it when I'm away for too long.
I know, so very fun. Well, we're gonna have you talk to a guy this week.
Okay.
He wants some help here, and he basically, I'm just gonna kick it off with what he has to say. He says, "I recently broke up with my girlfriend. One of the biggest reasons was that most of her friends were guys. I hold firmly to the belief that when a guy and girl are in a relationship together, that the guy should not have any close friendships with other girls, and the girl should not have any close friendships with other guys. I believe God made man to be attracted to woman and woman to man, and friendships between opposite sexes usually end with one or the other having some sort of deeper feelings than just friends. Is this a biblical principle that I'm following, or am I way off in expecting that level of commitment from my girlfriend?"
Well, I think this is a great question, and it brings up that you know, that ongoing debate of what kind of relationship is okay to have when you're single. And now that I'm married, looking back, I think it really is helpful to have a standard of, you don't want to be in any sort of friendship when you're single with someone of the opposite sex that would be inappropriate if you were married, because your standards shouldn't change. You know, your calling to sexual morality and to integrity doesn't like ratchet up when you get married. And so obviously when you're dating, you're going to be relating one-on-one with a man if you're a woman and a woman if you're a man. And there will be those elements of romance, and you're trying to, you know, figure out, am I attracted to this person enough to marry them? But I still think you don't want to be in a relationship that will be uncomfortable to be around once you marry, if you marry somebody else. And so for this guy, it does sound like he had cause to be concerned. However, I'm wondering if he was wanting her to relate to him in a way that went beyond the commitment level that he had given her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was he wanting her to be so exclusive and acting almost more like they were engaged? Because really, her relationship with all the other men in her life shouldn't be that different from her relationship with him early on in the dating relationship, especially externally. If that makes sense. You know, you shouldn't, when you're early in the relationship, be so obviously physically affectionate that people are going, oh, you know, they're a couple.
Right, yeah. I almost got the vibe a little bit from what he was saying, that there was an element of possessiveness in it.
I did too, and I guess that's why I'm kind of coming down hard on him first.
Yeah, because it kind of made me wonder, like, okay, did he give her some ultimatum? I mean, did he talk to her about this? Because it just seems like, you know, were they really able, did they really come to an impasse on this? Yeah.
Well, and I'm wondering too, did he not realize this about her when he started dating her?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he should know enough about her behavior and her character before he starts pursuing her for marriage, that, you know, I would hope that he would have been aware of this prior to starting to date, and that they might have even talked about it. I guess that would be ideal
Right.
To talk about what are our expectations, you know, for opposite sex friendships. But you really do have to be so careful after you're married about this. And I think we're not careful enough before we're married, because every time we meet somebody who's single, at least I always said, oh, I wonder if he could be the one. You know, and so then I would go there in my head imagining what life would be like married to him. And the reality is, I shouldn't have been doing that, because I'm practicing a thought pattern that you can't sustain once you're married.
Right. Okay. So where's the happy medium in this? Like, say, for example, she's a college student and she does have other guys in her classes, and there's kind of, you know, is this guy, what level of interaction can she have with them?
Well,
if this...
I think the standard of brother is what we hold up. You know, biblically, that's how we're supposed to treat one another, is as brothers and sisters in Christ. And so, you know, basic kindness is called for, and, you know, covering each other with love, and, you know, putting on the fruit of the Spirit, and acting that way to each other. And that is so different from the kind of flirtatious, taunting, leading on, you know, trying to catch somebody's eye. I mean, you know the difference. Mm-hmm. when you're relating to a man one way versus the other. And so I would, you know, ask her, are you really being fair to this guy who's pursuing you, or are you still kind of checking out the other guys in your friend circle? Because that's not fair either. I mean, certainly he's not the only one that needs to be called out in this equation. It sounds like she was relating to these other men probably a little bit more intimately than was comfortable for an exclusive dating relationship.
Right. Well, and we know in today's structure, the way things happen, it can also be online extended chats. It can be exclusive emailing or texting and stuff like that. So I think that's something to be concerned about. Well, because if this guy is acting honorably and he has asked her out and he's put his intentions out there and stuff, and at the same time, you know, she's using up a lot of her time hanging on to these other guys and having conversations with them, you know, that's not very honoring to him.
It, you know, the internet has made it so easy to give in to that temptation, and it can be so intoxicating to feel like you can turn a man's head, mm-hmm. and you can get his attention, and you can, and that your flirtation is eliciting the response you want, but that's sin.
Yeah.
And that we're not supposed to tease each other that way. And again, I think it's easier to identify this when you're married, because it crosses so many lines that are more obvious. But it's no less a problem when you're single.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And so you have to kind of be vigilant about it and make sure that people are in your life kind of catching that kind of stuff for you and helping you maintain
that
kind of thing.
You know, Lisa, when I email a man, I almost always copy Steve on it, and sometimes blind copy, but usually I copy in such a way that the man can see that Steve is in on our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Because just as I would rarely have occasion to have a conversation with a man privately in, face-to-face, I think the same should hold true for email, because with internet, it can escalate that much more quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that I've heard of enough marriages breaking up with the help of Facebook, that I don't think I'm being overly cautious. You know, some people may say that I am, but I would much rather be overly cautious than not cautious enough.
Yeah. I've even done that too on my end, because I can get, especially with coworkers, you know, we'll email back about something that has to be done or something, and then we'll say something funny or snarky or whatever, and then you can see easily, wow, okay, well, you know, this could easily become personal or whatever. So I always want to be careful about that and make sure it's either the team that's in on it or something like that, so it doesn't become these individual trails of stuff.
Right. And I think that's wise.
It's helpful to do. So, all right. Well, good thoughts, Candace, as always.
Thanks, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
I know. Very fun to have you as part of this. So thanks so much. Okay, everyone. That is it for this week's show. We always want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, and we'll make sure that we answer your questions, as I always say. Make sure you're following us on Facebook as well, because we're kind of putting some different questions out there and keeping you updated on different things that are happening. And of course, keep up with the shows, because we're scheduling new ones for the coming weeks. So we want to hear from you, and make sure you're still part of the Boundless family. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.